African-American cuisine is often thought of as soul food or southern cooking, but our next guest says there's a huge diversity of styles we don't talk about enough. She's surveyed hundreds of cookbooks from black cooks written over nearly 200 years. She's rounded up some of the classic recipes that evolved over time. And in her newest book, she updates many of those recipes for the modern kitchen and shares the stories behind them. Toni Tipton Martin is an award-winning food journalist. Her latest book is called Jubilee, Recipes from Two Centuries of African-American Cooking. Toni, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, again, people sometimes think African-American cooking equals soul food, and you write that's a part of the story, but not by any means the whole story. Can you talk about the diversity of African-American cuisine in American history?
Sure. I always want to pay respects to the creators and the precursors to soul food. That is the food of survival, the food that my ancestors created when the supplies were really meager and they really didn't have a lot of options other than whatever they could find in their natural habitat and whatever was left over. But there is a part of our ancestry that is very rarely talked about, and that would be the people who were doing the cooking in professional settings. And that can be traced, those people can be traced all the way back to the plantation kitchen house where they were cooking. A plantation cook was cooking elaborate meals, sometimes requiring French culinary training. And that food, in my view, and in the view of the authors who passed that down through generations, belongs to those folks. And we just have not given them credit where credit was due.
And your new book, Jubilee, it's a follow-up to an earlier project you'd done where you found so many of these cookbooks going back as far as the early 1800s. What was it like going back and seeing these recipes, sometimes in the words of the cook who cooked them, or maybe at one remove, and starting to connect people and names to these recipes?
It was really thrilling for me as a journalist. I was a reporter in pursuit of a story, to tell you the truth. I was looking for my grandmother on the pages of Southern food history, and everywhere I looked, there were all of these disparaging images of black women, not often portrayed as intellectual and certainly not as people who had apprenticed on the job or learned while doing. And so I had this brilliant idea, I thought, that I would just look up a few cookbooks and be able to hear the words and voices of these people. And before I knew it, the University of Alabama published a bibliography with some 400 titles on it. And I started Googling them and entering them into my browser. And now I am also the owner of more than 400 of these books.
And you write in Jubilee that if we could take some of these African-American cooks, whether they were in the plantation, as you mentioned, or maybe a free black cook in the north somewhere, a lot of the people you're writing about, if we transplanted them to 2019, they would probably be celebrity chefs today.
They absolutely would be. And if we think about how we honor our celebrity chefs today, it is people who we respect for the food that they prepared at work, right? We do not know what any of our favorites do at home with their families, unless that's their chosen book title, right, or their show. But mostly we respect and revere them for what they prepare at work. And African Americans have not been afforded the same equity in the industry. We always make the turn and revert back to the survival kitchen and the struggle. And as I said at the outset, I have the utmost respect for that canon, but I want to ensure that we're able to consider that people who have been preparing food with bechamel sauce all day and working with fine ingredients, if they had leftovers in that kitchen and took them home, for example, a trained chef who might have been working with asparagus and making a hollandaise sauce, we can assume that if he had some lemon juice and butter when he got home, he would prepare it in the same manner. And that's what I'm hoping for, is that we give respect to the people that were hotel owners and oyster house owners and vendors who were selling pralines in New Orleans. There's just the list of incredible people who were talented and knowledgeable in many ways, not just in cooking, but also these are people who would have had business skills, who understood quality of ingredients and all kinds of things that we think about. They're taught in culinary academy today.
Talking to Toni Tipton Martin. Her new book is called Jubilee Recipes from 2 centuries of African-American Cooking. Before we start to turn toward the recipes, Toni, can you talk about the concept of Jubilee? It's got a religious component to it. There's also the idea of celebration of freedom. Why Jubilee in terms of the recipes you're sharing here?
Well, don't you just love that title? I do. I think it's just so cool to be able to use this work as an expression of our freedom from stereotype, all of us. When we're no longer encumbered by expectations, we can come now to this book and to this material and to African Americans and ultimately to one another, with hopefully not limiting our relationships to preconceived notions, right? And my hope is that people who will come to find a new respect and surprise about African-American food history will be able to then open their minds and think, I wonder what else it is that I don't know about another person from another culture, and hopefully we can bring down some of the barriers that have been erected between us artificially, in my opinion, and increase our tolerance for one another.
We're talking to Toni Tipton Martin, award-winning food journalist. She's with us to talk about her new cookbook, Jubilee, Recipes from 2 centuries of African-American Cooking. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for Toni about the cooking styles she's talking about, writing about, the stories behind them, and the history behind these dishes? Is this part of your story, part of your culinary heritage, African-American cooking styles from anywhere around the country? And whatever your background, have you done this kind of history, gone back to your old family recipes, gotten the stories behind them, and maybe recreated them in your own kitchen? How'd that turn out? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. By the way, we've got a few recipes from Toni's book. You can find those at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we pick up our conversation with Toni Tipton Martin. She's a food journalist and cookbook author. Her latest book is called Jubilee, Recipes from 2 centuries of African-American Cooking. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest about the research she's done into the history of African-American cooking? Or do you have a story of your own, if this is part of your own food heritage? And have you done something like what she did, gone back and found historical recipes from whatever culture here in the United States and tried to recreate them in your own kitchen? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Toni, one thing I love that you bring up in your book is fusion cuisine has been kind of a hip, cool thing in recent years. And you write that African-American cooking has always been a fusion of different kind of cultural backgrounds and heritages. Can you talk about that?
That is absolutely true. And then when we think about it, American cooking is a fusion style as well. Both began with the idea of European recipes that were blended with African hands and Native American ingredients. And all of that fused together to give us what we know today as American food, Southern food, and ultimately, of course, of African American food. And so African Americans, as they were migrating around the country, took those elements with them out of the South, and they were integrated in various communities depending upon what they might find there. And so that could be different ingredients in the natural environment, like if they were accustomed to making nut breads in the South with pecans, then if they moved into a region where there were blueberries, they would add blueberries to the mix and you would get blueberry bread, banana bread. These are dishes that persisted all throughout the African-American canon of recipes that I discovered in the cookbooks that date back to 1827.
I want to share one of the recipes that you shared with us. We've got this at WPR.org/Food Friday. It's a wilted mixed greens with bacon. I'm looking at this beautiful picture of it with, I think, the bacon being drizzled over the top of it. And I look at it, I think the word salad. And you said this one didn't actually show up listed as a salad in a lot of the older cookbooks you looked at.
No, that's right. One of my favorite dishes growing up was spinach salad with bacon and hard-boiled eggs and mushrooms. I just loved that. And so it was quite a surprise to me to discover in the Southern food canon and the soul food experience that there was this dish, there was a dish called wilted or killed lettuce. And that we share that dish with folks in Appalachia who also call it killed lettuce. And it was this idea that there were bitter greens in the natural environment, like we think about dandelions, we think about various wild things, purslane and chicory and other bitter greens. And the concept of the practice of sautéing bacon and mixing vinegar with the oil to make a dressing, a warm dressing that you pour over those greens, just sort of takes the edge off of the warm salad. And today we do that all of the time, right? We have bacon spinach salad is one of the top salads you can get. You can even buy it in commercial, kitchen restaurants and in bulk at Costco. And so it's a favorite. It's a favorite. And it was fun to me to discover that it had this long standing history.
And in your version of this recipe, we've got not some of those bitter greens you're talking about, but you're looking for tender greens in this one. The spinach, like you mentioned growing up with, or arugula, chard, baby kale, watercress. These are, you might find those at any fancy restaurant there. This sounds really good.
They're also available at the farmer's market, right? And so we often go through the market and we think, oh, I just don't know what else to do, but I see all these lovely greens and everything looks so fresh and vibrant. And here's a dish that has got a longstanding history and it's adaptable. My family's taste buds tended more towards salad, so we don't make the dressing really heavy or hot. And we like the taste of the greens to really punch and come through. But the longer that the dressing soaks and the more the greens soak up that dressing, then they become limp and their taste profile tones down quite a bit. I also sprinkle mine with blue cheese. We really like ours that way. So I'm encouraging readers to really participate in the expression of these dishes in the way that my ancestors would have. They would have adapted dishes according to their environment and what resources permitted for them to do that with. And I want others to do that today.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Keith is with us in Kenosha. Keith, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, this is kind of maybe a sociological question, but we've all heard about something called food deserts, and they say, boy, we can't get fresh foods to these places. But I've often kind of wondered if in some of these areas over time, they've lost, people have lost their traditions of how to cook these kind of foods. And therefore, even if you got the fresh foods there, really don't know what to do with them.
Keith, thanks for the call. And we hear sometimes, people in cities lose that connection with the land and where the food comes from. Is that something you worry about, Tony, that these recipes you trace the history of might get lost in translation sometimes?
Well, absolutely. The idea that we have food deserts and that families have been detached from the practice of home cooking and self-care is definitely a problem, and it's evident in our healthcare system where we can see African Americans suffering disproportionately from diseases that have diet as a risk factor. So we certainly do want to encourage people to consume more vegetables and less meat and sweets and sugar and salt and all of those, things that can be overindulged in. And so one of the ways that I am hoping to address that is by helping families see that there is a dignified history for them in food preparation. Our history has been portrayed as one of heavily laborious and slaving in the kitchen is the term most often associated with cooking. And we want to really turn that around. And as a result of that, the photographs in Jubilee are spectacularly beautiful. That was, done intentionally. We Jarrell Guy, the photographer, had an incredible eye for the art of cooking, and just the selection of the serveware and things like that were intentional. We want to restore pride in cooking and help people understand that their ancestors were not natural-born geniuses, but they weren't hard, ignorant laborers either. They were people that were trained on the job. They were people that passed traditions to one another. And if we want to live healthier, more productive lives, we have to pass those traditions on again. And I'm hoping that we do that with the simple but beautiful dishes in Jubilee.
Keith, thanks for that call. We'll go now to Wanda with us in Orfordville. Wanda, hi.
Hi. The question for Toni: in her great collection of recipe books going back two centuries, maybe, did they list quantities as we insist upon today, teaspoons and tablespoons and cups, or was it so much of this and a good handful of that?
Wanda, thanks for the call. I've seen that in older recipes, Toni, where it's kind of ballpark measurements. What kind of things did you see?
Well, these were people who were very conscientious about the delivery of their recipes, and they often spoke in their introductions about the recipes developing over years of experience. They made sure to make that point. But at the same time, they did often, the recipes fluctuated. Sometimes there would be very precise measurements where irrelevant, and other places there would be measurements that were equivalents in the natural environment. And that was really, that took place a lot in the early 19th century when people weren't thinking in terms of measuring spoons. We get stuck thinking about that as normal today, but that's an occurrence that began around the late 19th century when domestic science and home economics were taking a hold of our women, and we started to quantify dishes. But home cooks always worked with visuals and talked about measurements in terms of things that were familiar, like the size of a walnut or the size of an egg. And so they were still very precise. If they said a teacup, that there was a standardness about that measurement. But those measurements don't necessarily translate to the measures that we use today.
Toni, we're talking to Toni Tipton-Martin about her new book, Jubilee, Recipes from Two Centuries of African-American Cooking. Thanks for that call. That reminds me of another recipe you shared with us, baked barbecued beans. One ingredient in the original recipe from Ernestine Williams for her famous barbecue baked beans, one of the ingredients was Ernestine's barbecue sauce. So this was a challenge. You couldn't buy a jar of that, so you had to recreate this yourself.
How about that? And I, what I did was I just cross-referenced every recipe that I had that I, you know, was working with. I chose a selection of cookbooks from the collection. I obviously could not refer to every one of the 400 every time. So I did make a choice and had a dozen or so that were my standard bearers for how to anchor myself in history. And I just cross-referenced and was able to determine that there was a particular style or type of ingredients that seemed to reoccur over and over over time. And that's how I was able to arrive at this idea for these beans. These beans were really important to me because I grew up loving pork and beans and beans and franks. And if we think of that as a food of poverty, but there was a time when home-cooked beans were a something special. You had them at barbecues. They were at family reunions. And so they became a sort of a memory dish. And so I wanted to include them for that reason.
One more recipe you shared with us, and I love this, and it's in part inspired by an 1866 recipe you create here, Caribbean roast pork. And this is complete with rum and lime juice and ginger and allspice and sugar. Can you talk about the Caribbean part of the story?
Sure. So the original concept for this book and its idea that there are two strains of African-American cooking is not an original idea to me. I discovered that in the writings of an historian, Arturo Schomburg, who in the 30s wrote a proposal for a cookbook with some 600 dishes in it. And among those dishes was a dish that he called West Indies pork. And I racked my brain looking through all of the good books trying to find an equivalent. What was this man talking about? And I searched and found different adaptations. And, of course, the books of the Caribbean had dishes that were meat proteins that were jerked or other highly spiced meat that were cooked on the grill. But what was really fun was to discover that the singer Khalees included in her cookbook that he left several years a dish for a combination dish that was a Caribbean pork, and she had some Caribbean jerked ribs. And so I took some liberties with her version and another version and arrived at this really wonderful dish that you insert. You make slices, into the pork roast and insert little slips of garlic so that amazing aroma and taste penetrates the meat. And so every bite is garlicky and spicy and tender. It's great.
Well, that's some great inspiration for weekend cooking. Tony, thank you so much for sharing the recipes and the stories with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. And you know, you have one of these experts right here in your backyard, Carson Gully, at the Carson Gully Center. So I encourage your listeners to learn more about one of the home guys there.
All right. Thank you so much. That's Toni Tipton-Martin, award-winning food journalist. She joined us today to share her latest book. It's called Jubilee, Recipes from 2 Centuries of African-American Cooking. You can take them for a spin this weekend. Head over to WPR.org/Food Friday. We've got that Caribbean roast pork we were just talking about, the baked barbecue beans, and the wilted mixed greens with bacon. That's a whole meal right there. Let me know when to stop by. I'd love to try them. Actually, and there's another one. We don't have this up. It's a bread pudding with a whiskey sauce. I like bread pudding, and I like the taste of whiskey, so I might give that one a shot this weekend as well.